Welcome back to another episode. This is the Poolsville Young Life Club Talks podcast hosted by yours truly, Caden Broadhurst. Thank you so much for tuning in again. This is our seventh week, I believe. I'm starting to lose track here. It's March 4th, Wednesday afternoon here for me. I don't know what time you guys are listening to, but I hope you're having a wonderful day. We're going to get right into it in just a second, but I want to ask you guys a question first. How many of you guys have had issues with pride? Now, living in America, and I'm sure most of my listeners are from America, we've probably all had issues with pride or feeling that we are better than other people. And it tends to be true. A lot of us do have more money, have more possessions, more things, more smarts, more education than other people. It's just a fact. We live in Montgomery County, where I live. We're the top 1% wealthiest people in the entire world. We have everything. We should have no complaints. We should not be able to take anything for granted, or we do take a lot for granted, even though we shouldn't. And we have a lot of stuff, And that causes problems for us because we start to worship that stuff, maybe. We start to think that that stuff is the most important, that those possessions, that wealth, that reputation, what people think about you is more important than the things that are really important. And we're going to talk more in that in a second. We're going to be in the book of Daniel, Daniel 5. It's a very interesting passage. It's fun, but it's also very powerful. And I know I say that about each club talk, and it's the true fact. Everything that we're listening to, everything that you guys are listening to here, and everything I'm telling my guys here at Young Life is really important. And everything points towards Jesus. And although we might not be able to find that in every single story and every single verse that we find, the whole Bible is Christotelic. It's all pointing to a goal, and that goal is Christ. And that goal is the gospel. God sent his son down to earth to die for us and take our sin, to take our shame, to take our wanting, our not being able to scale up in the balance of things, to be able to be called worthy, and he makes us worthy. We're going to get into that right now, but keep that in your mind. What things are you guys putting too much pride into? We're in chapter 5, Daniel, and its subtitle here is The Handwriting on the Wall. And I'm sure a lot of you guys might have been familiar with this passage. It's about Belshazzar. I don't know how you pronounce his name, but that's how I'm going to pronounce it, Belshazzar. He is a king right after Nebuchadnezzar, either a couple kings later or the next king. Bible says that there are a couple guys in between him, but we think that Nebuchadnezzar is his grandfather. And he's now the king. And he is a pretty good king in the people's eyes. He throws big parties, he's powerful, he's won back a lot of things, and the previous couple kings before him, in between Nebuchadnezzar and him, were kind of weak. They only reigned for a couple years, were assassinated, stoned, whatever happened. He's kind of a king that's actually been able to muster some power behind him and has some reputation behind him. People believe in him, right? Now, Nebuchadnezzar had some issues, as we'll kind of get into this, but I want to talk about it beforehand. Nebuchadnezzar was a righteous guy for a couple reasons after a certain point in time. And I'm not an expert at this, but I'm going to give it my best shot. He had some issues in his life, and God basically turned him into dirt. He became like one with the animals. He would roam the hills and eat grass, and he started to grow long fingernails and long toenails and teeth that became sharp. Basically, he became like this animal kind of creature, not worthy of anything, not human-like. And then when he was able to lift his eyes, it says, he lifts his eyes to heaven and reasons for his return, and he says he praises God, and he was restored, and God restored him to his kingdom, gave him dominion over an everlasting dominion. A kingdom endures with generation to generation, and the inhabitants on the earth are accounted as nothing, and he does according to his will among the host of the heaven. Basically, he's been restored. He's been brought back to his glory that he had beforehand, and this was purely because God allowed him to, because he said, okay, God, I understand that you are the one that can help me. You're the only one that can help me in this situation. I will praise you. You are the God of creation. I'm sorry for what I did. Can you help me out here? And God does. And that's kind of the basis for our story, but it's a little deeper than that. So this is King Belshazzar, and he has this great feast. And during this feast, actually, there's a siege going on in Babylon. He's the king of Babylon. And there's a kingdom that is fighting him. It doesn't really matter what kingdom it is, but there are enemies outside their gates, and they're in siege. They're not letting anybody through the gates. They're not letting anybody out. They're basically trying to starve them. But what Belshazzar does is he throws this giant feast for thousands of people and his lords, and drank thousands of his lords and drank wine in front of the thousands. And so it kind of just shows that it's a very grand party. So in today's time, maybe that's, you know, a huge banger. There's out, there's pot, there's all kinds of fun stuff they're doing. There are tons of girls there for the guys and tons of attractive guys there for the girls. Like it's a pretty crazy party. Like it's a party. It's not something on down low. We're not just hanging out with a couple friends. It's a huge party with thousands of people in the palace. Right? And it gets so big that Belshazzar, when he tastes the wine and gets a little drunk, he commands that the vessels of gold and silver and things that his father, grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, had taken out of the temple in Jerusalem be brought in. So before this, Nebuchadnezzar, he was the king of Babylon, he stormed Israel and he took a bunch of the rich stuff, the gold and silver from the temple that was designated for God. Those were kind of, that was the riches that were designated for the holy people, the right, they were righteous things, and it was a, they were a symbol of God's grace and love and power and his wealth. And the point here is not that they're taking this stuff that was already taken, like they're using the stuff that was already taken from the temple by Nebuchadnezzar. The point is that they're worshiping these things that used to be a symbol of God's power, of God and of righteousness and of holiness and of being a good person morally and being faithful to God, and they're using them for a party. So it's kind of flipping the scales. It's flipping the perception of what should be happening and saying, okay, these were supposed to be used for good things, and now they'll be using for, you know, debauchery. There should be just craziness, parties, drinking, alcohol, like all kinds of things that shouldn't have been happening. And that's kind of why this is thrown in here, especially for this certain passage, for this story, is because they're showing that they're worshiping these things of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, rather than worshiping God. And they were brought out of the house of God, out of the temple. Now, immediately when they'd done this, fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster on the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the hand as it wrote. Then the king's color changed and his thoughts alarmed him. His limbs gave way and his knees locked together. And a couple other passages actually kind of infer that his joints all seized up. So he kind of froze. He was literally paralyzed and he couldn't control his loins. So basically he kind of peed himself or something like that. He had an accident, we'll say. And because he was so scared, like absolutely terrified. And that's kind of shows the thing that God can do in a quick instance. He shows that he's got the power to strike fear into anyone. Now let's go back a little bit. Remember how I said they were having a siege? They're having this giant party in the midst of a siege on their dominion, on their kingdom, on their city. Why is that? And it's kind of easy if you think about it for a second. Don't we do the same thing? When we're in situations of danger or treachery or things that we can't really control and we're not ready for it, don't we kind of put it on the back burner and try and have some fun? Like for me, I certainly know this. Like I've had a lot of kind of dangerous, not dangerous situations, but stressful situations. My mom passed away in 2015 when I was a sophomore in high school, and I kind of fell off a little bit and tried to do a lot of things with my friends that were fun, and I went out with my friends a lot, and we went to movies, and got food, and I spent a lot of money on random things that I didn't really need, but I just wanted so that I could distract myself, right? We all kind of do that, right? If there's a midterm test coming up, we're going to procrastinate because we're going to go to parties, we're going to have fun, we're going to watch Netflix, binge watch Netflix until a couple days before, and then we're going to freak out and, you know, do the work and get a passing grade, right? So we all kind of do the same thing. When something is looming ahead of us or looming around us, if danger's ensuing, we kind of put it on the back burner and say, eh, it's not that big a deal, I'll worry about it later, I'll have fun right now. And that's not good. That's not good for us to do in life, and that's not good for us to do in terms of our faith with Jesus and with God. We want to be able to put it all out there and say, hey, I've got a plan on my life that I'm hoping matches up with God's plan for my life. That's what we need to do, instead of saying, I'm going to have fun the way that I want to, even though there's dangers around us. And you guys know that there's always danger around us. There's always temptation from sin. There's always temptation from peers, from parties, from drinking, from movies, from culture, right? Everything around us wants us to want things for ourselves rather than us wanting to have things for helping other people or for bringing God's kingdom. But that's what things are really important. All right, let's get back to this and I'll talk a little bit more. I'm getting a little too passionate here. Now, the king brings in all the astrologers. He calls for anybody that's the wise men of Babylon, anyone who can write it. They'll be clothed in purple and they'll have all these rewards, chain around their neck, and they'll be given third command in the kingdom if they can interpret what this writing on the wall says. And the queen comes in and says, this is after no one can really do anything about it. No one can interpret it. The queen comes in and says, hey, declare, O king, live forever. She comes in and does this whole thing like, you're the best king, blah, blah, blah. And I found this person. His name's Daniel, or rather, his name is Belteshazzar, which is his Jewish name. I don't know how that's supposed to be pronounced, but it's his Jewish name. And now let him be called and he will show you the interpretation. Like, I found this guy. He's not one of your chosen wise men, but he did some pretty cool stuff beforehand. And the reason why he wasn't chosen straight off the bat, I did a little reading, is because he was kind of retired. He did a lot of stuff in his youth, and he's getting a little older now, and he doesn't really do a lot of that stuff anymore, just because he's in a retired kind of state. He's getting older. And so that's why he wasn't there initially. But the queen knows about him because this probably wasn't Belshazzar's wife. It was probably his mother or maybe his grandmother Nebuchadnezzar's wife. So she knew a little bit more about the past people that were able to interpret things. So she called him forward. Daniel comes forward and say, you know, I'm here. I've heard you. I'm going to interpret this. But before that, I want to tell you something. Your grandfather Nebuchadnezzar was a great king and he conquered many nations. But because he decided to not follow God, he was stripped of all of it. He became an animal and ate grass. He was fed like an ox and his body was wet with dew of the heaven. And he knew that the only way that he was going to get out of it was to lift his eyes up back to heaven and praise God and rejoice that God was the creation of, that God was the creator of everything. And when he did that, he was restored. And that's what Daniel kind of reminded him about. He said, you've forgotten this. You've forgotten that when Nebuchadnezzar did the same thing you're doing now, he was stripped of everything. Once he says it, he says, okay, now I'll interpret it. And he looks at the wall and he reads what was written in the wall. It was inscribed Mene, Mene, Tekel, and Parson. And this interpretation says, okay, Mene means God has numbered the days of your kingdom and brought it to an end. So it's enumeration. It says, okay, Mene means your days have been numbered, they've been counted up, and it's time for them to end. And it says it twice. So it's very clear. It says, they've been numbered, it's time to come to an end. They've been numbered, it's time to come to an end. Second word, Tekel. A Tekel says you've been weighed in the balances and you've been found wanting, right? This is where it says you've been weighed, you've been measured. So first you're numbered, first you've got a numeration for what your time is. This is how much time you spent here, now it's time to end. That's how much time you had. Now you're being measured for not a thing that you can number, but something that's deeper than that, something that's in your heart. And it says you've been weighed and you've been found wanting. You've been weighed on the scales and you've been found wanting. And the third word, prez, parson, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. So basically says, you've been numbered, time for your life to come to an end. Time for your reign to come to an end. You've been measured, also your heart's been measured. You have been measured as a righteous, on a righteous scale, on a moral scale that God has made, and you've been found wanting. You've been found needing something. You don't measure up. You're not worthy. And then the last thing says, is to divide. Your kingdom is now divided. You're going to be overthrown because your days are over and you've been found wanting, and another kingdom is going to come in and take everything that you have. That's what this message says. And Belshazzar, the king, gives Daniel all the things that he said, third in command, purple robe, chain around his neck. You know, he makes a proclamation to the whole kingdom that he's third in command. Even though he says that, even though the interpretation was bad, he still follows through with his word. And that very night, the king Belshazzar and the Chaldean king were killed. And Darius, the Mede, you know, one of the kings from the nations that was going to destroy them, received the whole kingdom. And he was about 62 years old. And what goes on is Daniel actually becomes friends with Darius, the new king. And that goes on to a whole nother story. But what we have here is a story about a person who decided not to take the stories of the past, not to learn from the past, and go his own way. And because of that, he was destroyed. And now this is kind of a sad story, right? He doesn't get a second try. Or rather, he did get a second try, but he didn't pay attention to it. His second try was his father's second try, or his grandfather's second try. He was the second attempt. Nebuchadnezzar got the first attempt, he failed, he was given a second try. That goes down to Belshazzar, and Belshazzar knew what had happened, but he didn't see it. He didn't understand it. He didn't follow it. He knew that it was there. He knew that God was the creator of everything. He knew that God was the ruler of everything. And he decided not to do anything about it. He decided to still go his own way. That's the important part. He decided to go his own way, and he was destroyed. Just like Nebuchadnezzar was, he was destroyed. Except there was no second try that time. He didn't get a second try. The gloriousness, though, is that this happened a long time ago, and something really important happened in between this point and where we are now. If you look at a timeline, this happened a long time ago, and in between this, Jesus came. Jesus came down and set up a second covenant, one of grace and mercy. There wasn't mercy in this story for Belshazzar. He did wrong. He was killed. Nebuchadnezzar got mercy. He said, okay, I know you did wrong. You got some bad stuff. You were punished. You changed your mind. You repented. Now you get good stuff. Belshazzar didn't get that. Instant. You did wrong. You done wrong. You get punished. We don't have that. We get mercy. We get grace everlasting. Anytime that we do wrong, if we truly repent and we truly say, hey, God, I'm sorry. And in our hearts, we know that we're sorry. He gives us grace and mercy. And he says, okay, I understand. I'm not going to punish you. And that's because Jesus died on the cross for us. Jesus came down to earth and said, hey, if you believe in me, if you trust in me, if you follow me, if you repent of your sins, and if you reject all of the bad things in the world and don't do any of these debaucherous, any of these bad things, you will have everlasting life and you won't be punished. You'll be given mercy and grace. The great thing is that this saying here is the opposite, right? This saying is mene, mene, tekel, parson. But for us, it's different. I don't know what the translation is, but in mene, mene, it says your days are numbered and they come to an end. You've been weighed and you found wanting. Your kingdom is now divided and will be given away to other people and you don't get it anymore. What we're being told is we've been numbered and our days have come to an end, but Jesus says no. Jesus says our days are numbered, and if we follow him and if we do these things that he wants us to do and we're able to have a relationship with him, our days will never come to an end. We'll be numbered, but they'll never come to an end. It'll be everlasting because we get to live with him forever. The second part, yes, we've been weighed and we've been found wanting as well. We are not worthy of God. We are not worthy of Jesus' love. But because Jesus came down and died for us, and said, hey, if you follow me, if you give your faith to me, I'll weigh you again, except I will hold the scales and I'll make them even. I will make you worthy. So we'll be weighed and we won't be found wanting. We will, but Jesus helps us. Jesus helps us out there and says, no, you're not found wanting. I want you. I want you no matter what. And then the last part of that is our kingdoms aren't going to be divided. Our stuff is not going to be given away. Our stuff is going to become immaterial. It's going to become not important. When we die, our stuff doesn't matter to us anymore. But the great part is our kingdoms, our legacy is not going to be divided. God's going to divide his kingdom and he's going to allow us to come to his level. He's going to allow us to come into heaven with him and live with him in his presence. Instead of us getting our stuff taken away, God's saying, hey, you know what? You can come to me and you can live in my kingdom. I'll give you a portion of my kingdom because in my house, there are many rooms and one of them is being set aside for you. That's the difference here. No matter where we're at in our life, no matter what we've done in the past, no matter the horrible things we've done, because Jesus died for us, we're given a second chance. We're given mercy and grace. All right, that's what I have to leave with you guys today. I really hope you were able to get something from that. If you want to talk with me, find my number, find my email. I'm sure it won't be too difficult. Send me a message. Tune in next week. We'll have another episode. Hope you like listening. Please subscribe, like. It helps a little algorithm to get our views out to more people. Have a wonderful day, guys. Bye-bye.